With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
There we go. All right. 3, 2, 1. Hey, welcome to a special War Chant TV edition here. And you've been around War Chant for a while or Florida State, you may recognize these guys up here because they were at Florida State for a while. And they did something special back in 2003. And we're going to talk about that today because it's very similar to something that happened this past weekend with Florida State. And of course, to my top, I got to get this because it's like backwards. Chris Ricks over here, of course, you know about him, quarterback of Florida State from 2000 to 2004. And D-Rob, Dominic Robinson from 2001 to 2004. And I don't know why we have you guys on here. I think there was a little play back in 2003 we're going to talk about, and it was against a rival. What a coincidence. But before we get to that, I want to ask you guys first, because a lot of the fans watching this have not seen you guys for a while. I want to know what you're up to. So, Chris, let me start with you. I know you're doing some coaching. Some other good stuff. What are you up to these days?
Yeah, Gene, great to be on with you guys. Glad to see War Chant is still alive and well and thriving. Can't believe it's been almost 20 years. Over the past 11 years, been full-time on staff with FCA, Fellowship of Christian Athletes, here in Los Angeles County as a director. Coach Bowden, just like Dominic and a lot of us, introduced us to FCA at Florida State, made a big impact on my life. Have been a blessed and privilege to be on staff here in Los Angeles County, and then also running Champion Training Academy, working primarily with quarterbacks over the past 16 years since wrapping up with the Chargers, and then fortunate to still do broadcasting out here for Fox Sports, now Bally Sports, doing high school and some college games, and looking forward to number one team in the country this Friday, Mater Dei, as they take on Corona Centennial. So it's semifinals out here in California, so very privilege to be around ministry, sports, and relationships, and still around the game that I love.
Well, good stuff, Chris. I'm gonna take it up to you, Dominic. And you know, both of you guys coming from the West Coast, it's interesting too. And I didn't think about that too. You guys are both West Coasters here when you came in. The nice thing is, I get to know both of you guys not only in college but beforehand. I used to talk to you guys during the recruiting cycle. And Dominic, I don't know if you remember this one. I remember calling you because I'd always have to call late because you guys are on the West Coast. I called you like 11 or 12 our time. And I knew Coach Bowden was supposed to visit. And you start talking to me I'm like, well, how was the visit with Coach Bowden? I go, well, we're still in the middle of it. He's sitting right here. I'm like, man, get me off the phone. You can't have me on when Coach is in the room. But yeah, you guys were great to me during then. You're always great at Florida State. So I appreciate that. But anyway,
I thought you were going to tell another story that I remember that I'm embarrassed about now being an adult, but after I committed and I was coming to Tallahassee, it was right around June, which my birthday's in June. I remember I had my birthday party to go party or, I was leaving to go to Tallahassee party. And then the next day I called all the outlets essentially. And I thought I called you. I thought I remembered calling you and saying like, hey, I'm on my way. Like, you know, the guy that's going to turn be a 4-year All-American and like, here comes your star, like, you know, type of thing. And I thought you were going to bring that up because I just remember how cocky I was when I called you guys like, hey, you guys want to go ahead and do a story on me? Like, hey, I'm coming to town. Like, it's time for you to start, you know, rolling out the red carpet for me. Here comes the kid.
You didn't lack
it must have been a California thing because I felt the same way. So yeah. Dominica, you're not alone. Yeah. It must have been a California thing.
Yeah, I thought you were gonna tell that story.
No, I was gonna let you off the hook there, but yeah, tell us what you're up to these days, D Rob.
So I live in Phoenix. I moved here maybe 4 years ago. I bounced around a lot. I was coaching college football bounced around, kind of, you know, coached everywhere, did that. And I wanted to get out of that. I really, it was a means to an end for me. I never got into it to be a long time, you know, college coach or anything like that. I just did it while I could, while my kids were young, knowing that I wanted to get out. And, you know, honestly, you know, what I'm doing and when and who I am, like, I'm a coach. I was a born coach. I started training guys when I was 16. I've been training guys really ever since. And so, you know, that's what I do now. I run my own sports performance business. I have a baseball program that I run. I train athletes. I'm now coaching high school football. I'm a coach. Like, I literally, I walk around just looking for things to coach. And then I coach. I life coach. I spiritual coach. I emotional coach. I meditate coach. I yoga coach. I just, I'm a coach, man. That's what I do. That's what I was born to do. And, you know, a big part of that is you know, attributed to Bobby Bowden.
Yeah, he is the coach.
Like, there's no one better. There's not a human being on earth that exhibited that word. Like, whenever I write the word coach, I actually capitalize it. To me, coach is such a special thing. And he's the one that sort of gave me the meaning and understanding of the value of coach. He's a lifesaver. He's a life changer. He did that for me and thousands of other people. Yeah. And so I'm so thankful because every day I get to, you know, sort of pay homage to him every day, you know, even with the way that I manage my sons or I teach my sons or I coach my sons. I always feel like I'm paying respects to Coach Bowden. So it's kind of a really cool thing. I'm really, really thankful.
Well, yeah, we're all blessed that I was able to cover him as a member of the meeting. He was so gracious to us all the time. And then you guys to be coached by him. That was the biggest thing I took away from the memorial and talking to so many people. It's amazing how many lives he impacted in a positive manner. It's unbelievable. So I'm so glad you guys are doing stuff you're good at and stuff you love. I mean, that's something I get to do. And it's just amazing when people get to do something that they just love and it's their passion. So that's fantastic. Well,
how many years for War Chan now, Gene? What year are you guys in?
Started like 95, 96. So
wow.
We're getting up there. It's changed a lot since then.
95? There wasn't even internet in 95.
Oh, yeah, there was. I was doing the dial-up, D-Rob. I had the little
phone.
And go back on Wayback Machine. If you ever see that on the internet, you can go back and see the old versions. It goes back to like 97, 98. You can see War Chant back then. It's
wow. So you had some War Chant in those early days. I remember the newspaper, right? Did you still even print the newspaper?
No, we had like a newsletter. Yeah, we got with the Osceola for a while. That was there too. Yeah, that was it's crazy. We could reminisce and get nostalgic here forever.
Yeah,
guys, I do want to get into the play, and we're gonna, like I said, there was a 4th and 14 this past Saturday. All the fans know about it. I think most of them know about the 4th and 14, but I think it's interesting to have you guys on to bring that up. And we're gonna show you the video. The nice things we licensed to have some rights to show some videos. So a lot of times you can't do that on YouTube. We're able to do that. And this is the play. Okay, let me set the scene here a little bit, guys. So it's 4th and 14 against Florida. This is late. This is pretty late in the fourth quarter. You guys are all the way down on your 24-yard line. This is a little different than the one that happened this past Saturday when they were deep in Miami's territory. You were deep in your own territory. It says 1:23 left, 4th and 14. The funny thing, if you ever get a chance to hear the radio, Mick Hubert's calling this. He gave you absolutely no chance, was taking shots at Jeff Bowden during this play. So let me go to you, Chris, first. So look at this. And we had a good discussion beforehand. Set the stage. What's going on here? What's the play call? You guys first pointed out that you're in the personnel grouping you have here is a little unusual nowadays. In 2003, this wasn't that uncommon, but on a 4th and 14, you would never see this formation. But go ahead, Chris. Yeah. Walk us through what's going on here.
Yeah, no. I remember because right before this, I fumbled one of the snaps. I was looking at the safety rotation, had my eyes downfield. You assume you're going to catch a snap because you've done it 100 times. Snap was a little off and I dropped and had to get on it. Thankfully it wasn't turned over, but we lost a few yards. And so we were in a hole, and that's what made it 4th and 14. It was a 4-yard loss and where it should have been 4th and 10. And we got 3 wide receiver sets. I think it was our Panther set, but you have two running backs in the backfield on 4th and 14, which is a surprise. You think you'd be in an empty set, maybe one running back to open things up in the middle. But I just remember that we knew we had to get it done. I mean, this was it. It was do or die. We've got deep routes And Dominic had stepped in so huge at that Z position for Crofonzo, who had got hurt in that mm-hmm. NC State conference championship game when we beat Rivers and NC State. And D-Rob just had a day. I mean, he had a handful of catches, had a huge touchdown on a post earlier. He was just hot. He wasn't dropping anything. And I knew I could trust him on that deep dig route to the left side.
Yeah, D-Rob, this was your game. I remember, yeah, that first half, you had that touchdown in the end zone from Chris. And it talk about this play a little bit. If you're looking at the screen, you're on the top there on the strong side. Again, what are your recollections? And set this play up for us.
So I will say the very first thing, again, when I looked at this was the fact that we're in 20 personnel just blows my mind.
What is 20 personnel, Dominic?
Yeah, explain it for the people that don't know that.
That we have two backs in the game, and not only do we have two backs in the game, we had Lorenzo Booker on this team, and he's not on the field. and then we've got our fullback in the game, and it's 4th and 14. So there's two backs, there's two running backs in the game, and there's three wideouts. We had plenty of wideouts that could have been on the field right here. I mean, we had – Willie Reed was on the bench at this time then. That means Lorenzo Booker was on the bench. That also means
Chris Davis wasn't
out there. You know, these are guys that in today's game, there's zero chance that they're sitting watching this play or standing there watching this play and that we have a fullback in the game. The second thing I'll tell you, when the play was called, all of us, this was not a common call for us. And I thought it was Sting. It would be Panther left Sting. But I got the playbook right here, and it's actually –
Let's go, D-Rob.
It's actually Zebra.
Okay? Oh, so Zebra.
Panther left, pass 44.
Oh, Zebra. That's awesome. We actually have the play. Look at that. There it is.
I found it, and that's the play. Obviously, that we're in split backs instead of under center. Or we're in the game we were under center. Or we were in split backs, but that's the first thing. And when the play was called, I think all of us sort of looked at each other, at least the wideouts, and we thought, damn, game's over. this wasn't a common call for us. Technically, I'm not supposed to be as deep as I was on this route.
You had to get to the sticks. You had to get to the sticks on this one.
It wasn't.
Well, you better long than short, right?
What's that?
Better to run the route a little long than short. Like Chris said, you better get past those sticks.
Correct. And I don't think that I thought we would have pressure on it. So I thought, you know, if I get to the depth that I need to get the first down, Chris is going to be flushed and it was going to be scramble drill. I mean, if you were to ask every wideout, we all were sort of, none of us were excited to run this play, to be totally honest with you. We did not think, heck yes, this is a great call. We're about to get a first down. Wow. I mean, as you see, you know, PK's running shallow. Zero chance he's getting a first down. Chauncey Stovall is supposed to have a post. He ends up in the picture, you know, so his post wasn't even deep enough. And, you know, I was really the only option when you look at it, the way that we ran it. So it's just not a good play, right? I mean, you have one guy out of five options that's actually getting the first down. And, man, that's so fortunate. The ball found me. I knew that I would get open. I just thought that the pressure, I thought scramble drill would happen. And then if he's scrambling to the opposite side of me, you know, the one guy that's getting to a zone that's actually open is going to be, you know, covered. So I do remember that vividly, that we were not bouncing out of the huddle with fervor for the next, for this next play.
Right.
I can even remember looking at the sideline when I lined up, you can see I'm on our sideline. And I remember seeing faces of dejection on that.
Wow.
Like the other wideouts were over there. Like, man, we had them because they had all the momentum too. Remind you, like Chris said, he had just dropped a snap, and I don't remember what the second down play was, but it wasn't like we were moving and there was some sort of something to be excited about. Man, we were in a bad way. We're only on the 24 yard line. So we weren't feeling real good about our chances right here.
Aslan's behind the scenes running this for us, and we appreciate that. Aslan, if you can run it forward, I don't know, about five clicks there, about 5 seconds in, and pause it for us. Yeah, slow. So you can go a little further than that. So it looks like if you go on this, and it looks like there's the Russian three. You know, we talked beforehand. It looks like they got a spy on you, Chris. They're afraid you're going to run for 20 yards on them, huh? I found that interesting. And there you mentioned that you got Chauncey on the bottom, and that's PK going underneath, and you're taking off. You're like, I see the chains. I'm going to go past these chains to make sure we pick this up. So, Chris, again, at this point, you see they're only rushing three, not blitzing anybody. You got some time to let this play unfold. What's going through your mind right now?
Yeah, well, pre-snap, it looks like it was a four-man rush, a 40 front, yeah. And that they're going to bring four. They bring three, and that middle guy is just hanging out, as you mentioned, as a spy, in case I'm going to run it. I did have a few runs in this game, but the thing that surprised me is that they didn't bring more pressure, because, you know, when you bring more pressure, you blitz. The quarterback's got to get rid of it quick. He's got to dump it out to a back, got to hit a hot, a side adjust. And if I'm a D coordinator, that's what I'm doing. I want the quarterback to get rid of the ball quickly and not have the time to go through the drop. And the line did a great job on this one, giving me time in the pocket. And I was just waiting for that deep dig route from Dominic to develop. You can see PK in the slot here on the hatch. He's already coming shallow, you know, really right off the ball. As Dominic mentioned, he's not going to get to the sticks. So I was just waiting for that left area to clear up and for Dominic to break. And as Dominic mentioned, he was deeper than we would normally run this. His dig route's normally 10 to 12 yards. He's at least 15, if not more, on this one. And I think that's part of the reason why the ball's behind. I mean, some people think it was a perfect strike. It wasn't. This pass was behind Dominic, and he makes a great effort and adjustment to go back and snag it. I mean, this is one of the plays where you really see the hands that he had as a receiver, because this ball was slightly behind. So it was timing. It was a line doing a great job giving me that pocket, me waiting for it to develop. PK pulled a guy, and that zone just opened up. And there was just that window there. And even though it was a little behind, Dominic just made a great adjustment to keep the drive alive and move the chains.
Let's run it to the throw if we can. And about the point that Dominic's catching the ball that I want to ask.
I think we'll see this from the other clip, though. So the other kind of thing that comes into play here is Kewon Ratliff is the corner on me. Mm-hmm. So okay. who was an All-American.
Yeah.
Right.
And had already made a big play. I think he picked up the fumble earlier, yep. Returned yep. for a touchdown. I mean, this guy was an absolute ball hawk. And so I do, again, when I talk about the faces of dejection from the sideline, part of that is, okay, we're going to run a route into their strength, you know, with one guy and nobody else in that zone, you know, as an option. And I do remember feeling like, hey, I can get open, but I won't be able to get open in the space where I need to be in time, you mm-hmm. know? And so again, them not bringing pressure saves us, because when he reroutes me right here, I'm supposed to break about two steps off of this. So I should be breaking right there. And if I go flat, you know, I think that might be Gus Scott there, the safety that's in the middle. You know, he tackles me and I'm a yard short. And that's about how we ran that, you know, for every year that I was at Florida State, you know. Mm-hmm. So we ran that 100 times, but we never ran it to get this depth.
Right.
And yeah. So again, no, I knew I could get to an area where I could possibly get open, but the chances of Chris and I hooking up, you know, him being able to have the time to throw the type of ball that we needed to get a first down, I didn't feel good about it, you know. And again, and the combination of Kewon Ratliff and Gus Scott being in the secondary, you just didn't feel real strong about our chances, you know, yeah, running this route.
Well, a couple things, Gene. I mean, if they blitz there, I'm either throwing it out to the left to Leon in the flat or to PK on the shallow cross. Chances are they're probably tackling one of them between 14 yards. And normally on this play –
that's actually Greg. I just realized –
oh, that's it, Greg. Greg. Yeah. But Leon – oh, that's right. Leon was on the field on the touchdown to PK. Yeah.
So who's –
so it's Greg up top.
Is it Greg and who's the other?
And James,
it's
not Greg Washington.
And they had Greg Jones and Coleman back there?
James Coleman, yeah.
What?
Yeah, exactly.
It'd be one thing, they're not into block. It looks like they're running routes.
You think maybe it'd be Leon and Lorenzo. in the game.
2021, man, you're having your head on a stake, man. You roll a fullback and your 250 pound running back out there on 4th and 14. You're looking for a new job.
Oh my God. But on this play, it's usually a 3-step drop, maybe a 5. Mm-hmm. I believe I take a 7-step drop on this, knowing that Dominic's got to get deeper because it's 4th and 14. It's not our normal 10 to 12 yard dig route. So not a 3-step, not a 5-step. This is 7.
Yeah, you're right.
This is a deep drop.
Boom.
And Dominic gets to the depth he needs to get.
It looks like Dominic, you saw it coming in. You slowed down just a bit. There you go.
Yeah, see my angle. You know, that's a post angle. You know, we essentially ran like a glance post.
Yeah.
And that's not the play. You know, I'm supposed to be flat. It's a dig, and I'm really supposed to actually come in front of that safety, that's there in the middle. You know, based on the actual, like I just showed you guys, the play sheet. You know, that route is a flat. You know, that number 9 that's coming, I should be working in front of him.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And I just kind of, you know, I just kind of sunk into that zone, knowing that, man, if we have any chance, it's going to be in here. It's not going to be in there type of thing.
I still love how James is into the boundary, like, give me the ball.
He's looking, he wants the ball, man. Get that guy the ball, man. He's got zero catches in his career, but he get that man the ball. Look at him.
Oh, there he is. You're ball. Right. He wants it.
Yeah,
he wanted it early too, like fresh out the gate.
Man.
I'm open, man. Feed me.
James is a media mogul now. He should be on here with us.
That's awesome. It's funny. I love talking about this with you guys because some nuances I've never noticed on this play. That's fantastic. So when you guys go ahead and complete the play, you talked about how you guys were kind of dejected at this point. When you got a team in a game like this that's gone so back and forth and so competitive, you got a team stopped. I got to think emotionally when you pick up this 4th and 14. You guys had to feel, okay, we got this now. And we'll hold up to talk about what happens on the next play because we know how big that was. But,
yeah.
I mean, did you guys kind of feel that energy at that point?
I think so. I mean, I wasn't panicking here. I mean, we knew we had to get it done on this 4th and 14. I think we all were kind of on, like, right here. I mean, you can see there's no panic from Dominic. The line does a great job on this play. I mean, that's looking back at those years, that's where we played some of our best football offensively, when we were on the attack, when we were up tempo and going, where we weren't taking a lot of time to huddle and regather. And a lot of these happened in these Florida games where it's like, hey, we got nothing to lose. We're just going to attack and go up tempo and fast pace. So we were in a good rhythm in this game, and we knew we had to get it done on this play. After we converted it, we're like, hey, we got new life. And then, you know, obviously the play call was try to take another shot because we had some opportunities, I had PK earlier and it overshot him. So we were getting behind him in coverage. It was just a matter of execution.
Aslan, if we can run that in real time one more time, if you guys got more to say. I want to run it real time once and just run the – if you got the audio, if not, that's fine. And I think they got the ISO on you.
And he doesn't only make the catch. He takes the hit too. A lot of times that ball comes out on that big hit from someone, and Dominic not only made the great catch, but was able to hold on to it.
Dominic, you just thinking, what's that thing? You got that in your hands. You're probably just thinking, man, just whatever you do, do not drop this pass.
I would agree with Chris, though, about that, you know, in terms of like our panic and the way that we were. It did, you know, because this game had so many swings, we were really calm in the moment. And then especially after this catch, because of the big swings that just continually happened throughout this game, I the second that ball touched my hands, I knew we were going to win the game. Mm-hmm. You know, it's amazing. Yeah. You know, it would have been cool to see the graph that they have now, you know, the win.
The percentage. Yeah. What your percentage are winning the game.
Like,
yeah.
Before that play, we had like 5% chance to win. Once I caught that ball, it swung all the way to 95%. Like, mm-hmm. We were going to win that game. We had the ball at the 50, and, you know, you felt it. But it was chaos around us, though. That stadium was rocking. Yeah. On that fourth down and the on the fumble that Chris is talking about, boy, it was – we couldn't communicate at all. It was rocking. I talk about it a lot about, mm-hmm. you know, people ask me all the time, what was your favorite stadiums to play in? And I'll say, man, 03 in the Swamp was – it was really, really cool the way that that place, I mean, they were loud and the ground was shaking, and it was legit. It was a lot of fun. But I just do remember in the huddle that we were pretty calm and collected. We didn't feel, there wasn't a sense of panic, you know, for us, you know, but it did, I will say we didn't feel good about, once we got the fourth down, it's like, well, it's just running another play, you know?
Yeah, because our offense was rolling that game. I mean, how many total yards we had, but you see Dominic had over 100 yards receiving.
Yeah, you had four touchdowns, Chris.
I mean, our offense was rolling that day, minus that one turnover I had. We were unstoppable.
Yeah, I think Matt Hanshaw might have had a touchdown in that game, like at tight end, who may have been his first catch of his career. Like, we really were doing whatever we wanted, you know. So it did feel like, okay, if we can convert this fourth down, we'll be fine. It's just a matter of, you know, when you get to a fourth and 14, you don't ever expect to get those, you know.
Yeah.
And it's kind of crazy too. I think Donovan McNabb and Freddie Mitchell completed a fourth and 17 in the playoffs, I think that same year against the Packers. And it was, I just remember the announcers being like, no chance, you know, they're not completing this, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, I don't know. We've seen fourth and 14 before. It's just three more yards, you know. So kind of crazy that those two things happen so close to each other.
And I love the play calling this game because it was aggressive. I mean, when we got to a lot of these Florida games, we were playing with house money. We had already won the conference championship. So, you know, there's a difference in play calling when you're playing not to lose versus when you're playing to win. And this game, we were playing to win. It's a rivalry game. We're going for 10 wins. We've already got the conference championship locked up. Now we're shooting for the BCS. And Coach, you know, Coach Jeff Bowden, Coach Dickey, Bobby Bowden, it was just a very aggressive game plan. We're going to attack them and impose our will. And when we did that, we had very good games offensively because we were playing to win and being the aggressor, not really playing conservative, but attacking. And that's, I think, a big reason why our offense was successful in this game. And usually whenever we play the Gators, because it's at the end of the season, rivalry game, and we weren't holding anything back.
And that's a great segue, Chris, because I want to talk about the next play just real quick, because you guys, you said you had kind of an emotional lift on there. You talk about being aggressive. The very next play, you go for the knockout punch because you knew you had the momentum. And I mean, I do love the call at that point. It's like, we could just kind of middle our way down the field. No, you know what? We got them on the ropes. We converted that. They're probably a little upset they didn't do it. Let's go for the knockout punch. Just your feelings on getting that. We don't have that play to show, but just your feelings on going in, that getting that play call, we're gonna launch it to PK. I'm gonna roll out, do that, and put them out of their misery.
Yeah, and we're in our hurry up offense. There was a little over a minute left, so there wasn't a ton of time. And again, we had gotten behind them in coverage before throughout the game. A couple balls were dropped. I overshot PK, I believe, on the previous drive when he had gotten by Gus Scott. So Coach Bowden and the offensive staff knew that our receivers could get behind coverage, especially when they went man. It was just a matter of execution. So I like the aggression on not having to try to risk it, getting another third or fourth down, having to move the chains, but going right after it. And PK got behind Gus Scott.
Well, next time, maybe go ahead, D-Rob.
Yeah, I wish we had video of that play. So the call was, it was take off, Y, go. Okay. So, and I also played Y. So PK and I flipped back and forth at Y.
Yep.
With Crow D-Rock out.
D-Rock could play every position. He could play Z, X, Y, utility receiver.
And with Crow out, I typically stuck to Z because Chris Davis was young. And, you know, I think he may have had a fumble or a drop in that game or something like that. But I typically, you know, he and I would switch, and then that's why Chauncey Stovall was in the game at X on that fourth down play, because when I go to Z, PK goes to Y, and Chauncey goes to X, or Willie Reed would go to X. Yeah. Well, so their coverage, they would play cover two, but they would play a trap corner way inside of the outside receiver. So I actually had a catch or two on the go in between the hole between the safety and the corner earlier in the game. So when they call Y go, I'm knowing I'm about to score the touchdown in the swamp to beat the Gators, because they weren't guarding the outside guy go on the in the trap. The corner would come inside, And then Gus Scott was playing sort of a low man technique on the Y. And that's why we would call Y go. So it looked like he's running shallow to freeze that underneath defender. And then he would go up the seam. Mm-hmm. Okay. So if you look at the throw, if we were to see the video, the safety who's supposed to be guarding me is right there as PK catches the ball. Mm. And this is what made Chris Rick so great, because he feared nothing. Like, he never feared what you could do. He always believed in his ability to throw the punt. And he always wanted to throw the knockout blow. Always. Like,
sometimes good, sometimes not good.
Right? And it didn't matter if we were up 42-0 or, if it was a 14-14 game, he was looking to beat you by 30 with the next throw. Like, and so, but I knew that, man, I'm going to be open on this. And I wish we could show the video, because I'm standing on the sideline.
Next time, we'll bring PK on next time, D-Rob. We'll do that again with Chris. We need to have a whole separate video just for that play, probably.
Yeah, that would be a great video, because there was, not obviously PK made a great play. Chris made a great throw, and it's not that it wasn't there. But if we were trying to sort of move the ball slowly down the field, like I was – there was nobody near me, and I possibly could have taken off down the sideline and scored on it. But it was, I just remember when that call was made, it was totally different than the 4th-and-14 call. When the 4th-and-14 call was made, it was like, oh, here we go. Like, it's just another call. Uh-huh. When he called Y go, I remember being like, I'm about to be a hero. I'm about to make the biggest play in Florida State history. Because that safety is not getting over here. And if Chris gets it to me, I'm about to boogie on this thing. So, that was a really good call. Like Chris said, I think we had it early in the game and we might have just missed it. But I had been open on it earlier. And I think I even caught one or two balls during the game on just the fade outside, because the technique that they were playing out wide was a real unique, trap corner where the corner doesn't reroute. It wasn't like that 4th-and-14 coverage where
Kiwan checked you and
get his hands in, get me inside. They weren't even trying to reroute the wide out. They were just letting him run free, and so he let me run free, and then the safety to my side, he took off to guard PK, so there literally was nobody on my side of the field.
Yeah, we got to find that all 22 that wide.
Yeah. And on the TV copy, it pans by me and you see me standing there. But the all 22, you see it, and you're like, oh, man, that dude's open.
D-Rob, you are a hero, man. You got the 4th-and-14. I mean, nobody's going to forget that.
That next play wouldn't have been possible if he didn't make that play.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, you were definitely a hero in that game. So we can roll. So the reason we're talking about this is because there was another 4th-and-14. Alzon, if you can roll the 2021 version of 4th-and-14, if you got that one ready for us. We're going to talk about that. I'm sure you guys were watching the game the other night. Yeah. And what they had, and Florida State's obviously struggled quite a bit against its rivals the last few years. And this is a huge must win for Mike Norvell and for this team. Now, as you guys pointed out, the difference in offensive philosophies between 2003 and 2021, a little different.
Yeah.
So, I kind of want to get your guys' expertise looking at this. You got obviously 4th-and-14, Miami's 25-yard line. Minute 5, what were you guys, a minute 21, 31, whatever?
Yeah, I think it was
very similar, except Florida State's deep inside Miami's territory. Obviously, you guys were backed up a little bit. You got a single back, Jordan Travis here in the situation. So let's, roll a little clip so you guys can see kind of where we're going. Roll it a little forward here.
Yeah, the first thing is
stop there if we can. Yeah.
You know, they're an 11 personnel, so they've got one back and one tight end.
But you notice a similarity here? How many they're rushing, and is there a spy? Same thing.
Yep.
Yeah, that's insane. Really, really weird that would play out that way.
Future D coordinators that are watching this, blitz, bring pressure, force them to get rid of the ball quick. It may not be the answer for everyone, but that's what I would do. Not give them that time to sit back and let the routes develop. Force them to hit as hot. Trust your defense is going to swarm and make the tackle.
You guys talked before. It's interesting about, you said Manny Diaz kind of defensive philosophy is generally he kind of went against his tendency here, totally rushed three and kind of going a passive thing. here. And I, obviously, in hindsight, you can say you should have brought some. I mean, what were your kind of thoughts when you guys are seeing this play out? Will they let Jordan sit back there and wait for everything to develop?
Well, at least bring one of those guys. Stop. Look, there's someone on the 25, and then there's someone on the hash. They're both just sitting there. I mean, at least bring one of them more pressure.
Yeah, I think they had two spies. Bring them. Yeah, I think they had two, because I don't know if you guys remember back, Clemson started doing this Venables, and he had two spies on Jordan Travis. So I guess that's what they were trying to do here as well. But that's when you're that close to the goal line on that situation, man, I don't know if you need two guys. It's going to be a long way to run with all those guys back there.
Yeah, I'll tell you, I was shocked, because I've actually studied Manny Diaz, a good amount, and I know he's one of the higher level blitzers. He loves to bring five man pressures. He's a fire zone guy, and so there was no doubt in my mind that that's what he was going to bring here. Now that still doesn't mean that we couldn't have picked it up, and you know, it's not like he's bringing an unblockable blitz, but I was pretty shocked to see that. And then the other thing was they went with a trips concept where the number two receiver clears out, you know, the zone or the safety. I believe that's number 80 right there. That's at the bottom right above the 105. And he sort of clears out the underneath coverage, which is probably the concept that we should have run. You know, like that's a much better, you know, 4th and 14 concept. You have a lot more vertical options, obviously. They had the tight end and the boundary going vertical, and then number 80 clears it out for 7 to come underneath, you know, which is a very common, concept that everybody runs. And actually we ran it. That was the more common concept, actually, when I was at Florida State, that we actually ran. I believe we called it Nebraska. Is that right, Chris?
Yeah. That's right.
We called it Nebraska, and it was just number two receiver clears out, and then the outside
underneath
the dig or a curl, and so that was a good concept, great call, by coach right there. And that's the concept that it would have made more sense for us to run that than what we ran, because there's just more options there, more vertical options to get the fourth down. To get 14 yards, where, like I said, on our concept, there really was one guy that was an option there.
We mentioned this earlier, which is another eerie thing about this. You guys picked up 24 yards on your 4th and 14 conversion. This play went for 24 yards.
Wow.
Different team, but a rival game in the final minute. And, of course, Florida State, a few plays later, punches it in to get basically the game-winning score. Now, I'm curious, because this has been a little bit of debate. People have talked about this with Diaz. So I'm curious, you guys are both into coaching a lot. Florida State gets down the 1-inch line. There's still about a minute left. Miami's got a couple timeouts left. Do you let Florida State score, put yourself up? You're only down 3 at that point. You got a minute left, a couple timeouts left if you let them score, and you got a pretty good young quarterback who's been pretty effective. Or do you agree with Diaz and he just told his team, bow up, we're going to try to stop them now? I mean, I'm curious, what's your take on that?
You go first, D-Rob.
I would say I'm trying to stop them. I know there's a lot of, the new school, new age guys and would lean to letting them score there. I'm a new school guy, but I'm not there yet. I still come from Mickey Andrews' tree.
Yeah, we know what Mickey would have done.
And if there's time on the clock and there's football being played, then you're trying to knock somebody's head off, and that there's no if and there's no there's no question about what to do in that situation. That's still too deep in my blood, and I don't know that I'll ever be able to. Which actually, the high school that I coach at, we got into a have to let the other team score situation in week one. And man, it makes me really uncomfortable, because the Mickey in me is too deep, it's too strong. And I don't think you ever can let another team have success in any way, shape, or form, whether you're up 100 or down 100, whether it's first down in 10 or fourth down in 50, you don't let them get a yard. I think he did the right thing. Or I wouldn't say there is no right or wrong. It's just a matter of preference. And my preference is, man, if we're playing a game, I'm trying to win. I'm trying to compete. And not that you're not trying to win if you let them score, but I want to compete on every play. Like, every play has a history and a life of itself. So on this play, I never wanted on my ledger that I didn't play as hard as I possibly could.
I get that. But Chris, being from a quarterback's perspective, don't you want the ball in your hands with a minute left to try to win it?
Yes, but that's also when you had Miami that had been struggling the previous few drives, that's not a ton of time to drive the field and get into field goal range. And Dominic mentioned it, you take into account the personality of the coach. When I did all the Texas games in 2012 for University of Texas, Manny Diaz was a defensive coordinator. And, he got ripped a lot for being over aggressive and blitzing a lot and having that kind of aggressive mentality. But that's one thing I liked about him. And listen, when you're on the road playing your rival and arguably fighting for your job, I mean, imagine if he'd let them score and then they don't even get to the 50-yard line.
Yeah.
You have everyone saying, why'd you let him score? Their goal line short yardage defense had been pretty solid in this game. Remember, they had the one turnover that Silvera got, which turned into a score for them. In a rivalry game like this, I don't think you let anyone score. You trust your goal line defense. And, hey, let's force this Florida State offense to score on us. Maybe if there's 2 or 3 minutes left, but with about a minute left, again, that's not a ton of time. And their quarterback wasn't looking as great in those last few drives as he was in the third quarter when they got them the lead. So I think it was a right call to make Florida State earn it. And again, there just wasn't a ton of time on the clock to bring them back. But luckily, it worked out to Florida State's advantage. At first, when they didn't score on that, I'm like, shoot, now they got to score from the goal line. But it worked to their advantage because they were able to use up all that game clock, which didn't allow Miami to have a lot of time to put a field goal drive together.
Dean, can I say this too? Philosophically, you also have to think about the damage that you're doing by letting them score. If you're Manny Diaz and you're early in your tenure and you've instilled in these guys that, hey, man, we are going to hit people in the mouth and we're taking no prisoners and all these other things that coaches, do. In that moment, man, you're really sending a very, very strong message if you go, hey, now we're going to let them score.
Yeah, true.
Exactly. Passive. Like that, the damage there could be irreversible. And that could be something that you're answering to 3 years down the field. If you've got a freshman or three years down the road, you've got a freshman or a sophomore out there, that will affect him. He'll remember the rivalry game in Tallahassee when coach said, hey, let them score.
Yeah.
And, you have to be careful of those things, man. Those things can be very damaging and giving them your very best shot and letting them score could actually be something that comes back to, help you 2 or 3 years down the road. And instead of hurting you when a guy goes, maybe I'm just going to take this play off. I remember when coach gave us permission to do that.
Yeah, and Manny's a defensive coordinator with a lot of pride. Yeah. You don't want to be known as a soft D coordinator, and when you're the head coach, that adds another layer to it. I think if they let him score, that defense and that program loses a lot of respect for him. Not that you want them to score on that short yardage, but if you just let them score, I think that's a whole other firestorm that Manny Diaz is dealing with.
Well, Dominic, that was a good point. That's why you're coach with a capital C. you look at several levels to this. There's a lot of nuance besides just looking at the numbers. When it goes to coaching, it goes to the mentality of your team and the emotions that go into a rivalry like this.
Recruits that are watching the game, all of that.
Yeah, if you're a defensive recruit, you see that probably puts a bad taste in your mouth. Yeah,
I'm a D lineman and I want to win the game. And I know coach is going to not give me the opportunity to do that. Man, I don't know if I want to go play for that guy.
Yeah, that's a great point. So last thing I want to ask you, I know you watch Florida State, you keep up with it. Been some rough couple of years. That's why I brought you on. If you could have been in Doak for that, it's just unbelievable. It felt like the old school atmosphere. People are so into it again. They're so excited what's going on. If I can get real quick, your impressions of where you see the program going and what you think of Mike Norvell and what he's been able to accomplish this season.
Yeah, I like Coach Norvell. I've been fortunate to have a few conversations with him. He did a Zoom when he first got the job with a lot of the former players, invited all the players to be on a Zoom call with him as he spelled out the vision and the mission of the program and where they were going. And, I really like the direction he's taking it. And I think we're trending in the right direction. And I think you look at the heart of the man, you look at the work ethic to see all the time that he's putting in. He really cares and he gets it. And I'm not saying that Willie Taggart didn't. I didn't know Willie. I didn't have any conversations with him, unfortunately. But just hearing Coach Norvell's heart for the program, his drive, how much he cares. I like the direction we're going. I think it just needs more time, more of his guys in and more buy-in. But I think we saw a glimpse of it in North Carolina. We've seen glimpses of it. And just to see that win, I was so happy for them to get that win at home through all the ups and downs they've been through for that senior class. To get that kind of emotional win against Miami in your home stadium, I know if I could feel it all the way in California, I knew Dominic could feel it in Texas. We were very happy for the boys.
And Dollar, what do you think of these guys from a coaching perspective? I guess, what do you see in this? And I guess right now, are you putting in your resume to Mike Norvell? It seems like you got the chops to maybe be on the sideline here someday.
I will say this just as a sort of a positioning statement that all of these guys need much more time than they're getting. It's been very frustrating for me since I got out of college football, watching these guys get fired just time in and time out after getting 3 years, 5 years, whatever it is. Again, if we were to look back at the greatest coach of all time, you know, our coach Bowden, and if we made pass judgment on him after, let's just say, his first 10 years, in today's day and age, he probably would have been fired. And I don't even know what his record was or any of that, but being in the ACC with how competitive things are and the money and all this other, these other things, all of the great coaches of sort of our generation, you know, before college football became such a huge business, were getting much greater opportunity to give the team and the program a personality and, you know, a philosophy and a direction and a way to play. And so these guys are getting judged way too harshly, way too quickly. And it really frustrates me. I'm super passionate about it. Obviously, again, being a coach and being as into coaching as I am, you know, I feel horrible. And again, I'm more frustrated or as frustrated as anybody with Willie Taggart's tenure. I did not like watching my own family, you know, play the sport that I'm obsessed with. It was hard for me to watch, not because of Willie Taggart or any one thing specifically, but as a whole, it wasn't a very fun product to watch. So I'm not here to say whether a guy deserves or doesn't deserve to get fired, but I am here to say that coaches, college coaches as a whole, need to have a lot more time, runway, leash with the things that they're trying to implement, because they're doing more than just coaching on Saturdays. There's so much that goes into being a college coach that this is not understood and it's not taken into account. My guy up at UW just got fired, Coach Lake, after 13 games. This is a phenomenal coach, a phenomenal man. Maybe he made a mistake. Maybe he didn't, but either way, he deserved a lot more, you know, time to put his stamp on the program before being let go. And I could go on and on and on. So I hope that we all, this includes me, give Coach Norvell the opportunity to, you know, the same opportunity that we gave Coach Bowden when he took the job, you know, 50, 60 years ago or whenever it was, you know. So I will say that. And then the second thing is I went to the Clemson game, the Clemson Florida State game, and I was incredibly pleasantly surprised with the spirit that they played with. I was incredibly pleased with the passion, the energy from the sideline. I could see it, I could feel it from the coaches, from the players. The style of play was a type of style that made me proud as a family member. That was something that you don't necessarily get to see or feel on TV. And being at the game, it was the first time during Norvell's tenure that I personally went, okay, I feel good about this thing. Like, I'm proud of what I'm seeing in terms of, again, the passion, the approach. It felt on schedule to me. So
yeah,
I can't say enough about the spirit that they played with. Was something that I don't think has existed. Now, again, I haven't been to a game, so maybe it did last year and maybe it did during Taggart's tenure, but I just know it didn't come across for me on TV, and it came across that Clemson game, Clemson Florida State game. It came across like this is a team that's playing with the spirit that I can be proud of as a, as an alum and as a family member.
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head. That's one thing that really strikes me about this team and what Norvell's been able to do. There's fighting these kids. I mean, if you watch some of the games, it doesn't matter if Florida State falls behind. They could have given up this game down 8. You know, everything was going against them. They had some weird plays that went against them in the second half, but you just knew this team has done this all year. They fought back. Guys, we go on and on talking about this. This is great. I definitely want to have you guys back to do more of these things. This is really cool. And I appreciate you taking some time out from your busy schedules to spread the love to Florida State Nation. It's a good time right now. Everybody's really excited after what happened. And, you know, a couple more games, they might be in a bowl game, guys. So let's hope they get it done with 2 more games. Chris Ricks, Dominic Robinson, you guys the best. I miss you, guys. I hope you get out to Tallahassee soon.
Well, hopefully they don't need a 4th-and-14 to beat the Gators this year. I'm expecting us to beat them by double digits.
Oh, but, Chris. Wow.
But, Gene, thank you so much for having us on. We love War Chant. And D-Rob, love you, brother.
Thank you, man. Thank you, D-Rob.
I appreciate you thinking of us and having us on. And, let's do it again. And hopefully we'll be able to see you at a bowl game.
Yeah, that'd be nice. Hey, you get out to Arizona, man. One of my favorite bowls, that Fiesta Bowl. That's a lot of fun.
Love it.
See you guys out there. Thanks, guys. D-Rob, Chris Ricks joining us on War Chant TV.
Thanks, Gene. Thanks, Aslan. Seminole Nation.